And welcome back to the Nutri-Medical Report. And we have a caller, and your name, first name, and your city, your town, or country. Where are you calling from? And you're on the air. This is Dr. Bill, hour number three on. So, John in New Jersey, go ahead.
Well, this is regarding the subject of Planet X and how it relates to the big push by the global elite for a new world order.
Right, yeah, okay. Do you want me to give a summary of Planet X so people understand? Firstly, I'm a very skeptical person. People might think, well, no, you're not skeptical. You sound like you're out of your mind. No, it takes a lot of years for me to prove to myself that something is true or not true. And they'll notice lately when I bring on Professor McCanny, he's very remiss to not cover the issue of Planet X. And people find that very curious. There's a very specific reason for it. He did a number of programs, including movies and videotape, et cetera, and on, even on the Discovery Channel, that talked about the approach of a dwarf star into our planet. Now, people need to understand dwarf stars, because they burn very slowly, they last a long time. And I'll ask you a series of questions. How long does a dwarf star last in our galaxy, a brown or red dwarf? How long is their lifespan?
I have not studied that. I know the brown dwarf...
Well, I'm going to give you the answer. I have the answer. Okay, firstly, the average yellow dwarf star like ours lasts around 10 billion to 12 billion years. The large blue giants will only maybe last 100 million years. They actually blow up. They're really big, they burn really fast, and they can explode and create a supernova. Red dwarf and brown dwarf stars can last from anywhere from 10 to 100 trillion years. Not billion, trillion. It lasts a long, long time. They're only about 5 to 7 degrees above absolute zero. They have a very strong geomagnetic field around them. The brown dwarf star can have the equivalent of 1,000 masses of Earth and be about 20% of the size of the sun. Okay? So we're dealing with something that, number one, is only seen on a thing like the Chandra X-ray telescope or infrared IRAS, which is infrared telescopes, or if you have what's called a Pymeson scope, which they have below the ice shelf in Antarctica, because the one that they're worried about coming is coming in from the southern ecliptic. Now, the way you tell the signature, if there's a Planet X object in the Oort cloud, which is 0.73 light years out, is you see the movement of what's called hyperelliptical comets. These are comets that have never come to the inner solar system, because if they do, they're modified by passing near the sun, and they get burnt by the sun, and the tail gets burnt off, which means you can see a signature if you actually could see these up close and look at their frequency or thermal signature of their tail. You'd see that they never came into the inner solar system. They were pushed in by a deep space object. Well, we've had a bunch of those in the last decade. And, in fact, people need to realize that what's that one called? A rising sun, I'm trying to think of. It was just about a year ago. That's another hyperelliptical comet.
ISON.
The ISON comet. These comets are a signature to tell you there's a deep space object, a brown or red dwarf star. I have to tell you specifically, although some people have said they think it's a brown dwarf, it's not. It's a red dwarf. There's a difference. Red dwarfs have a much more powerful magnetic field. Their magnetic field also has an effect on the torsion field. Any planet that has a solid core and a semi-solid mantle with a high concentration of iron generates what's called a torsion field generator, which means our planet, which is a nuclear reactor, generates a magnetosphere, just like the magnetosphere that's around Venus. Mars has gone cold, so there's no magnetosphere around Mars. None. Which is why the planet lost its atmosphere, because without a magnetosphere, you can't protect your atmosphere from being blown away by the solar wind. The solar wind would blow away our atmosphere if we didn't have a magnetosphere, and the bow shock wave pushes it away from us so we don't lose our atmosphere. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Now, these are astrophysical facts. They're not just Dr. Deagle's conjectures. So you have to understand the first scientist that discovered the perturbation of Neptune and the outer planets was Tycho Brahe, who was a Danish astronomer, a very brilliant guy, and he used Newtonian physics to actually analyze the movement of the planets and said there must be a deep space object affecting the periodicity of the outer planets, because he knew that it would only be affected by gravitonics from a deep space object. And this is long before Albert Einstein and his special theories of relativity. It was based on simple Newtonian physics. That's about 150 years ago. You know about Tycho Brahe.
It was around the early 1800s, I believe, around 1830.
Right, so it's a long time ago, about 160 years or so ago. Very brilliant guy. Now, you have to understand here, people say, how do you know all this stuff, Deagle? I said, look, I started studying astrophysics when I was back in school. Anything I'd get like a giant sponge, I'd suck up to it. And if I talk to people like Dr. like Professor McCanny, and he's afraid to give me straight answers to a lot of things because he knows that if I ask him enough questions, I'm going to box him into a corner. And you can tell that on the program, right? I box people into corners really quickly.
Yeah.
No. I learned a lesson by my father, who was very smart as well. He was number one out of 7,000 in the American Geological Association, and he did his training in his actual, if you want to call it, internship at Cartier's in New York in gemology. He was number one, okay? Perfect score out of 7,000 candidates. What you have to understand here is that if I know what you know and what I'll know more than you. And so if I ask enough questions, it doesn't matter whether it's a nuclear engineer studying reactor design or astrophysics, whatever, I'll ask enough questions, and after a while I will have absorbed, like an artificial intelligence supercomputer, everything you know plus what I know, which becomes pretty considerable after a period of time. I do not think qualitatively the same as other people. You have to grasp that. Now, it's not to be arrogant. God gave me those talents like my ancient ancestor Moses, who was my blood-directed ancestor, so I would be able to serve the Most High God's people, because we're at the time of the end. And what's happening here is the globalists are panicking. the guys that ran the tunneling machine? You remember Phil Schneider?
Yes.
Well, I knew Phil. I didn't meet him personally, but I knew him. I talked to him many times. I took care of his colleague that actually was in the tunneling machines with him, John Fiella. Okay? And he got particle disease because it would hit them with impact lasers, sodium-cooled nuclear reactor tunneling machines that create a zero-degree debris tunnel. And they'd form a tri-radiate maglev train tunnel and vacuum it out and put fiber optic cables in the ceiling. So they had high-speed communication underground as well as high-speed maglev unidirectional trains. And they were down about a mile and a half to 5 miles down is where these tunnels were running to cities. And their favorite places to build cities were in dormant magma domes, because when the lithosphere moves on a mantle of the Earth, the hot spots move, and you no longer have anything feeding that magma dome for the volcano. It hollows out, and you got anywhere from 4.5 to 12 cubic mile size place to put it. And the way they discovered this is they were doing space-based torsion field imaging in the 50s and 60s, and they discovered this. Now, why is this important with dealing with Planet X? Because at the time in the mid-90s, when I was taking care of employees working at U.S. Space Command, Strategic Defense, and Star Wars, and was in the highest classified military base on Earth, which is Schriever, at Falcon, Colorado, three higher levels of NORAD, which is 2 miles down, I became aware of multiple first-hand sources of the fact that these maglev tunnels are everywhere on the planet, including under the oceans. They also, when Phil and John were tunneling through the Baja California, they had a tunneling area where they estimated, based on rock dating, that the tunnels were made with similar technology but were 300,000 to 500,000 years old in the area of Southern California and Mexico. Okay?
A
lot of your history you hear, 300,000 to 500,000 years old.
Wow.
He also, by the way, when I was directed at U.S. Space Command by the commander there, he said, we're going to have a come-to-Jesus talk. So he told us, me and Dr. Ogradnik and the others, and of course Ogradnik didn't take it seriously. He was a funny Ukrainian guy, young doctor, real smart, but he's the kind of person that wouldn't question, things when they'd say outrageous things. He said, nah, that can't be real. They're talking about the Dark Knight satellite and our research in space. So when I come back, I'm going to give you more information on why they don't want to talk about Planet X. And believe it or not, it is coming in. It's not going to get within 55 million miles of Earth, but it will have nasty effects on us, and I'll explain what kind of effects in just a minute. Welcome back, and John, I'm explaining some plasma quantum physics here. You have to have beta electron emissions by deep radioisotopes, and some people call it the odor mantle, which is liquid, around the solid core, or the odor core, which is liquid, around the solid iron core of the Earth, because basically the iron is created by supernovae. Iron is a isotope that's only created when stars explode. So basically, the fact that our planet has a solid core and has a magnetosphere is that a previous star died and those iron particles agglomerated to create the core of the Earth. And the radioactive beta-emitting molecules create what's called a torsion field that literally protects the Earth so we don't lose our atmosphere and our water. The fact that Mars lost their atmosphere and water, according to Velikovsky, occurred as little as 4,000 plus years ago. It was stripped off by the passage of the planet we call the red dwarf star Nibiru, or the destroyer, because it passes between the orbit of Mars and Jupiter. That's what it does. It comes from the southern ecliptic. It doesn't pass through the outer solar system. It goes back to the outer solar system, but it passes through the ecliptic range between Mars and Jupiter.
That's what the archaeologist Zechariah Sitchin had
Right, stated. And there's very good evidence that the ancient planet of Tiamat is a planet that was destroyed because it was directly struck by this passing red dwarf star and was destroyed and created the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. This is the ancient planet that was destroyed by the passage of the dwarf star, Tiamat.
And they speculated, although it is still theory only, that part of that broken massive planet Tiamat became planet Earth.
Well, not only that, also thought that there was a capture of a planetoid that has a reverse spin of all the other planets, and that's called a planet of Venus. Venus is not spinning the correct way, which means it wasn't created with the beginning and the formation of the solar system. It was a foreign object that's caught in an orbital pattern around the sun. It's about the same size as Earth, but because it has a very heavy atmosphere, it does have a very strong nuclear reactor occurring, but it also has a real true greenhouse gas effect. It's not just carbon dioxide. It's sulfur dioxide, hydrogen sulfide, and lots of other very nasty stuff. So lead is liquid on the surface of Venus. It's not the love planet. It's the, oh my God, we're in hell planet. Okay? Now, people want to know. They want to know more. And so McCann, you see, a lot of other people are very afraid that the Grand Inquisitor, i.e. Dr. Deagle, and I don't claim to be nice about this. I just keep on, I'm like a three-year-old that's gone crazy. Give me an answer to this, an answer to that. So the same thing, right through school, high school, university, medical school, I'd have professors begging me, for God's sake, Deagle, stop asking inappropriate questions in class.
That's why professors don't have any hair, because you cause them to pull their hair out.
Oh, yeah, and they would always say, go into pathology, because they're the smartest of the doctors. I said, but all my patients would be dead. He said, good, nobody will talk back to you. Okay? No, so people want to say, Dr. Deagle, you acquired this personality defect of late. No, I was born this way. Before God conceived the universe, he said, I'm going to make a guy with a few body parts and brain parts missing. He has no reverse gear. He doesn't have a shut-up button, although my wife thinks she can get me to shut up at least temporarily, and you do on Friday's show. Not asking questions, I'm like a three-year-old on crack cocaine. I'm going to ask you questions, and I say, I usually, because I have Viking ancestry, I'm going to ask you a question. Now, people need to understand why this is important, because I keep on trying to squeeze McCanny and other experts to come on the program. I don't know when these things are going to happen. I know other people are saying they can visualize this and that, and they see something, they see the planet coming in. You can guarantee that whatever science is going on, because, and I know this firsthand, not secondhand, I took care of the team going to the South Pole at McMurdo Bay. Now, people say, how did you be in all these places, Deagle? I said, God had my day timer. When I worked at CECOM, one of our contracts was the main team that goes to McMurdo Bay was based, believe it or not, in Colorado Springs. And we at CECOM had the contract. So when they went down there, of course, you know I'm going to ask a zillion questions of the team because they're all astrophysicists. They had a Pymeson telescope under the ice shelf. People don't even know what a Pymeson scope is. Pymesons will zip right through the planet and stars like they're not even there. Pymesons. You're aware of that, right?
Yes, particles.
Subatomic particle that zips through the planet.
Subatomic
particle, right? They also have what's called muon scopes, so you can actually see deep space. They were looking at, they had a whole array of deep space X-ray telescopes, and others are based there, because the atmosphere is so thin, there's no problem. You had to put the Chandra X-ray telescope up, or IRAS, which is the infrared telescope, to see the approach of these dwarf stars, whether they're red or brown dwarf. They know it's coming in. Now, it's not going to get near Earth, because its natural pathway isn't. But here's what's happening. All the planets are heating up. People say, why is the planet heating up? Why is a big area of oceans getting hotter? Why are methane hydrides being released? Well, guess what? It's the plasma physics of a deep space object with a strong magnetic dipole operating at a great distance to changing the nuclear reactivity and the plasma physics of the planet. It changes the solar activity of coronal mass ejections and solar filaments. It changes the nuclear reactivity of the planets, like ours that has a magnetosphere in Venus. It changes large planets that are actually a star, because people need to understand technically, Jupiter is not a planet, it's a star. And
yes,
the definition is a star is an object that generates more in a part of the infrared and ultraviolet and electromagnetic spectra that is greater than it receives from its parent star, Sol, or the yellow dwarf that's our main star.
They used to think that Jupiter was so far out that it was cold, but now they realize that Jupiter is much warmer than they thought because it is a star.
It's actually a star. It's a twin star for the sun, but our sun actually is a trinary system. We have Nibiru, or Destroyer, or Heraclibus, which they've put in the cartouches in ancient Egypt. And guess who was trained to know about these things? Moses, because he was taught by the high priesthood of Egypt. The knowledge was passed on from Sumer that goes back to the ancient kingdoms of Atlantis. There were three falls to the kingdoms of Atlantis going back 500,000 years. People need to know this. Okay, this is history. You're not going to hear anywhere else.
Half a billion or a million?
Half a million. Half a million years.
Three falls of Atlantis?
There were three falls to Atlantis. Three falls, okay? Three falls of the kingdom. That's why if you go to the Hopi prophecies, you'll see the fifth fall is the one that we're in right now. We're in the fifth fall. There's three previous falls.
The USA Empire is Atlantis, modern-day Atlantis.
Well, modern-day Atlantis basically is, in fact, if you go to Sir Francis Bacon, who was the illegitimate son of Queen Elizabeth I, and he was a genius but a high-level wizard and mason, he literally wrote in a Voynich document the specific details using what I call esoteric language and numerology, which goes back to Kabbalah. And there was a biblical Kabbalah that was good, and there's also satanic or wizardry Kabbalah that's used by the viziers, including the viziers from Basra that later migrated to Saudi Arabia and became the Al-Saud family controlling the Saudi Arabians. And every court in Europe had a vizier from the Middle East, primarily from the area of Basra. Were you aware of that?
No.
Yes. And they have to understand when people say, oh, that sounds kind of, like Lord of the Rings stuff. Because it was. Because they controlled the future by using hyperdimensional demonic physics. Or wizardry. And people say,
look at the magicians in Pharaoh's court during the time of Moses. And they were.
Yeah, people don't take it seriously. They'll say they believe a portion of the Bible, but they don't believe that the Pharaoh's wizards could throw down their staffs and turn them into snakes, or that Moses' snake ate them up. Nah, that was allegorical, not.
Right.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
Interesting, eh?
Yeah, very fascinating.
Back in a minute. I'm breaking up a lot of your paradigms of reality, people. It's like an egg tooth breaking through the shell. I'm going to explain a little more about astrophysics. The first thing is, for every star, and there's 200 billion stars in our galaxy, there's 10,000 to 100,000 brown dwarf or yellow dwarf stars. Because they last so long. So when the primary star explodes, their cousin or their entrained star, they're shot out like a pellet. Some of them are approaching 1/10 or 1/100 the speed of light. And they're slowed down by what's called gravitonic braking over a period of billions of years as they zip through the cosmos.
Braking, B-R-A-K-I-N-G.
B-R-A-K-I-N-G. And they're slowed down, and eventually they get slow enough they can be entrained or trapped. Only about 10% of brown or red dwarf stars are trapped in an orbital pattern, usually from a hyper-elliptical one, from what's called the Oort cloud. The Oort cloud basically is deep space. It's 0.73 light years out from the Earth to the deep space, where there's a number of these so-called orbital objects like planetoids, like Pluto, and there's other ones that are much larger they've discovered recently. That's why they tried to demote Pluto. Now, why is all of this stuff important? It's because this is the nature of what I call the Lake of Fire, which was what we live in, okay? So cataclysmic activities occur, and of course, if you're an advanced civilization, you want to destroy a planet, all you got to do is aim an asteroid or a comet or even steer it in. But this object, they know the destroyers in the ancient cartouches in Egypt and Sumer, and everybody knew that these things would return, and there are periodic cataclysms that happen to the Earth.
How do we know about the time period? For example, when is the last intrusion of Planet X?
There's a lot of people who give different dates, but the date that I have that it seems to be the most reliable, and there's several different ones, is roughly the dwarf star returns to our inner solar system roughly every 3,550 years.
3,650, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, around that range, yeah. And what happens is when it returns in that time range, it brings an entrainment of comets, so you get basically a comet, and they often get bumped in, like just almost like in a billiard ball table. They get bumped in long before the actual dwarf star actually gets into our solar system and hits what's called the ecliptic, which is the plane of the rotation of the planets around the sun.
Right. Why do comets come in first, and also along
comets,
with as it's right, sort of a cloud of bodies surrounding this dwarf star?
Right, but the first thing that happens is. The first thing was what's called a torsion field. And let me explain this, okay? before a coronal mass ejection or a filament falls in the sun, there's a change in the T1 half of radioisotopes on the Earth. And a lot of nuclear physicists don't understand this. If you're a nuclear physicist, listen up and I'll explain this to you. What happens is there's a change in what's called the Higgs field. And the Higgs field is what they're doing research on at the Hadron Collider. What Einstein described was what's called time-space. We said time and space are interlocked, okay? You have the dimensions of space, which is three. Then you have time-space, which is basically the interlocked dimension of curved time-space or energy. And then that is embedded in what's called the Higgs field, the basically wormholes, or we call connections across time-space, are actually formed by what's called the Higgs field. So time-space is embedded in a higher dimension called the Higgs field, or the God dimension. You want to call it the God field, basically. They call it about the God particle or the graviton. The Society of the Bell, what they did is they created a torsion field using rotating plasma forms of mercury, and they create what's called a boundary zone between the surrounding areas so the gravitons would push against it and create anti-gravity. So anti-gravity basically is creating a boundary zone so the Higgs field particles, the gravitons, push against it, just like buoyancy of a steel boat or a concrete boat in the ocean. You'd say, well, how will that float? It floats by Archimedes' principle. Same principle applies to gravitonics. You follow me?
Yeah.
Now, long before the ultraviolet light arrives, in 8.5 minutes from the sun, there's what's called a gravity wave. And that's a hyperdimensional gravity wave that passes and travels faster than the speed of light because it's a Higgs field. It's a, if you want to call it, a wrinkle in space-time. In other words, it's actually a torsion field. So that's why you can transit across the galaxy, which is 100,000 light years in a matter of moments, because you're traveling faster than the speed of light because you're traveling sideways across light and time-space. Do you follow me?
That's kind of deep. That would take a little study.
So in other words, they've already done studies on the Earth, and if you won't believe me, you can actually pull them up, that the T1 half of radioisotopes in containers, even a mile underneath the ground. And they've done research in Canada. They have a facility up in North Bay, Ontario, where they have a deep mine there. And they've been doing studies. And they said, oh, my gosh, before a coronal mass ejection happens on the sun, there's a change in the T1 half isotopes. That's because the change in what's called the torsion field, which is the dark matter, dark energy, which is a substance on which time-space is embedded. That's why when they talk about dark matter and dark energy, they're referring to the Higgs field. There's a change in the radioisotope half-life. Do you follow me? And that occurs before the light even arrives. So we're talking about faster than light because we're talking about curved time-space or the Higgs field. All right? Mm-hmm. That's why the symbol above the Hadron Collider, which, by the way, had a problem last year. They had one of their little accelerator chips was wrong, so they had it shut down for a number of months. And they finally fixed it. They're literally trying to find, quote, the God particle, because what they want to do is develop what's called star power energy. They already have fusion energy. They take helium-3 and they put it through two converging spiral plasma magnetic fields, and they converge and they crash the helium-3 ions together as a plasma and create what's called a torsion field generator that generates this very powerful torsion magnetic field, and they induct it to turn it into electricity and power, or create what's called an ion field. So they have ion jet rockets that are between here and Mars and the moon. They're all based on what's called torsion field physics and helium-3, which is mined from the moon, which the Chinese announced last year they're going to do. So when I say this on my show, people say, how do you know this, Deagle? I said, I have multiple sources. First-hand technical sources from my contacts, second-hand scientific sources, and third-hand supernatural, which God shows me things that no man could know except by the mind of the Most High. Okay, people say, that's not possible. I said, well, you can check the science. You can find out that the Higgs field changes the T1 half before the coronal mass ejection, and the light arrives here in 8.5 minutes. The next thing that arrives is what's called the beta particles or electrons, which take so many more minutes or hours to arrive. And then finally, you get what's called a plasma and proton field. So there's waves of different types of energy particles, but before the energy particles arrive, there's a change in the time-space, what's called a time constant of space-time, and that's the Higgs field, which changes the half-life. Why is that important? Well, that time constant is being changed by these very powerful dwarf stars. And even their deep space at 0.373 light years, the magnetic field and their what's called their Higgs field effect of a dwarf star is 200 times stronger than the sun, which is quite a bit bigger. That changes the nuclear reactions inside the objects like our planet and very Venus, so it causes warming. So when they say global warming, what they're actually referring to is the fact that the planet is actually being heated up being heated up from the inside by the increased nuclear plasma activity caused by the deep time-space constant change caused by the approaching dwarf star. You probably never heard this before by anybody,
very, very
right?
interesting. Yeah, I always wondered, I wasn't sure as to how the phenomenon...
That's why they're so panicky over trying to discover this, why this project called the Hadron Collider Project is so important, because they want to try to understand it. I'm explaining to you in terms that won't be published probably in the public domain for 75 years. But I'm telling you today, in 2015, what you might find in open journals in 2090.
Well, there may not be another 75 years.
There will be if our planet repents. And again, remember, I'm not just called as Dr. Deagle and scientist. I'm called as a prophet of the Most High. And
well, that the Bible tells us that there won't be. Time should soon. We're in the end time, so time
yeah, but remember,
should end.
It's the end of secular time. It's the start of a different kind of time. Remember, here's the nature of what human beings are. And this is important for people to understand this, because I'm going to teach you something here that Jesus taught and fits perfectly with the Bible. The first thing is, you cannot sin against man. You can only sin against God. Number two, we are a tripartite being, which Jesus taught. We are a physical body. We're a soul or mind, and the two are interchangeable. Your mind is your soul. And then finally, there's a portion or spark that makes you exist that is a spark from the Most High that is eternal. When the will of the Most High and your soul are in agreement, you become, quote, married to God, and you become a consort to God. Therefore, you have a scepter and a right and a rule, right and a responsibility to rule. So literally, when you become, you start to walk, I call in the eternal life. Like when Jesus went in and he cast out demons or he healed people or he prayed for them or he got discernment, even on scriptural issues, it's because he says, I do only what the Father says. All of us Christians have that capacity. All of us are sinners because we have the potential of sinning against God. Now, why is that important? Because these challenges right now, scientific and technically, to survive, and why they're trying to hide in the deep places of the earth is because they do not serve God. They're trying to hide from judgment. My spirit grieves for a time of trouble coming again. We are the burst bangs, and there's going to be an event happen in the not-too-distant future, and I don't know what it is, because I only know things partially as in a haze. I'm a locksmith, not a map maker, and I'm a checklister. I checklist all the things that are going on. But here's the reality. Our mind and soul exist in hyperdimensional, the seven realms of the spirit. So does Satan. Satan, the best description of him is the most intelligent created being in the universe other than the eternal one, who is infinite, who lives in the eternal now where there's no past, present, and future. So Satan is a very narcissistic, trying to bring his order out of the chaos, which is the lower five dimensions. He wants to be co-ruler of the universe. And anyone who does evil, basically the definition of evil is not taking a piece of fruit in the Garden of Eden. It's deciding for ourselves what is good or evil without consulting God. That's it. And you cannot sin against man. You can only sin against the Creator, just like King David said. Why is this important? Because what's going on right now, why they won't fix Fukushima, why they won't even prepare the populations for a coming indwelling dwarf star. Because what will happen, and here's a couple of the kind of cataclysmic things that are coming. They want to do a cover of a nuclear war while these events are happening from deep space, because the real events happening aren't a nuclear war. That'll be very bad. But the real events are going to be what's called a pole shift or lithospheric shift, and it's happened before. There's a gradual creep, and you can see it in areas like Galapagos Islands where there's a creep toward Antarctica. So you can see a new chain of islands. You can see it off in Hawaii where the crust of the Earth is only 11 kilometers deep to the hot spot there in the Hawaiian Islands. But what's going on is there's usually every so many hundreds of thousands or millions of years, there's a major shift of the lithosphere. And we're heading toward, and it jumps, and it can jump a good distance as well. If the Earth, for example, the lithosphere or the crust slid 1.3 miles per hour over 2 months, it would move 20 degrees longitude, and it would move, for example, if it went in the opposite direction to where the North Pole is moving magnetically, it would move the equator to pass through Havana, Cuba, and most of America would be in the position of Central America.
And, you know, this drift of the geographical poles, magnetic poles, I'm sorry, not geographical, but this drift of the magnetic poles is well documented. It's very excessive
right.
and worrisome.
Yeah, you got to see all this. Now, here's what's happening. Right now, we have the acceleration of the plasma physics of this dwarf star because Fukushima is inserting heavy radioisotopes along the deep trenches of the ocean. So the movement of the oceanic currents are bringing warm water to California that never had warm water before. It was always cold. Even the guys that are surfers and diver friends of mine, they tell me the water has not been the same since 3/11, 4 years ago. We're having a change in the release of methane hydrates from the deep oceans. In the oceans, there's 1,000 mile by several hundred mile areas of the Pacific Ocean that's heating up quite a bit. And it's not from the sun. It's from the deep oceans, from magma activity deep in the oceans. The inner oceanic cleft, which is 23 miles long, around 1,000 miles long, around the center part of the Pacific and Atlantic and Antarctic and other Indian oceans, is heating up dramatically. And the reason why these methane hydrates are released from the Arctic, the permafrost, and so on, is not because of global warming. It's because of the change in plasma physics of the planet because of the approach of the dwarf star. Okay?
Right.
Let's get that straight.
The outer molten outer core and the lower mantle are being heated up, as you say,
now,
by this radioactive.
The reason is, when I took care of John Fiala and our new Phil Schneider, but I can tell you very specifically, they were building at the time either in these we call matrix cities where they drill a tunnel. And the tunnel was at that time in the mid-90s, 120 feet across. And they were drilling at a range of 6 to 7 miles per day. By the end of the 90s, they were up to 14 miles a day they could drill through the rock. And they created an obsidian-type core so they could lay down maglev tracks, vacuum it out, and have high-speed maglev trains that could travel at its peak velocity up to 2.2 Mach. Mach 2.2.
Wow.
Pretty fast. Okay? So you could travel from London to New York City in about 45 minutes. Easy.
Two and a half times the speed of sound, practically.
Of sound, yeah. Pretty fast, okay? Now, when you get deep, and when you're in the surface of the Earth, small earthquakes can cause disruption. But when you get down about anywhere from 1.5 to 4 or 5 miles, only very large earthquakes are actually cause any vibrational effects or damage to the tunnels. So you have to get into a real high-level quake, like 11 or 12, before it's going to disrupt or damage these deep tunnels. And their favorite cities were these dormant magma domes, or these matrix cities where they drill back and forth and create a grid-like pattern to put these cities now. They have the primary reason for the illegal drug industry is to stash away food, supplies, and material to hide from this approaching dwarf star. Okay? That's the facts. A nuclear war, if it happens, or a biological pestilence, is just a cover because they almost think they're humanitarian by killing off much of the population by radiotoxins or by massive super plagues, which, by the way, I get the actual documents that they're planning on these things to, quote, humanitarily reduce the human population before the great cataclysm.
I'm glad that you brought that up, the fact that they are deliberately trying to create a nuclear war. Everybody, even a sophisticated
Alex brought it on recently, but I know much more specifics. And remember, I'm only still giving you... Yeah, John, I'm only giving you 10% of what I know. People need to know most of what I know. I can't tell my wife or anyone else. I can't tell anybody.
Right. Because most people, most people will say, you're crazy. They would never want a nuclear war.
No, I'm not going to tell you. The reason why is you can't handle what I know, okay? I'm going to give you enough right now because we're getting close to some pretty cataclysmic times. This year, 2015, is the start of what's called a worldwide famine. We are the start, just like the days of my ancestor Joseph, who was the father of Ephraim and Manasseh, which all the Ephraimic tribes. My ancestor Joseph, who was the descendant, and who later on Moses was his descendant, is my great-great-great-great ancestor. I can tell you right now, we are in the times of the prophecy like ancient Egypt. There's always a foretaste of that prophecy, which is ancient Egypt. Think of the world as Egypt now. And we have finished 7 years. Remember now, 7 years after the great economic collapse that happened in 2008. This year, which is a Shemitah year, I call it the Shemitah has hit the fan, we are now moving into the Day of Judgment. The blood moon, last blood moon occurred on Pesach or Passover with the Harakilibus, which is, by the way, the death angel, which is the exact name for the dwarf star that Moses knew because he was taught by the high priests of the signs in the heavens. And he knew because he knew the ancient signs in the heavens, which we talked about with Jonathan Gray. He knew the ancient signs of the return of the destroyer, Harakilibus, or the they had other names in ancient Egypt for it, but it's the same thing, the dwarf star. They knew when these things occurred, it caused all kinds of comets to appear in the sky, and they knew that Harakilibus is returning.
Right. God told Moses in Exodus chapter 12 that the death star, the death angel, would come pass over.
Right. Now, I'm going to say something that may shock people, but they're going to hear it today because we're so close. It's time for me to say this. When I got my book, Clay and Iron, I was an ex-Roman Catholic attacked by a priest in the vestment room at 14. I was served as a high altar boy and even served at exorcisms with the Catholic Church, and I had a dispensation even from the Pope. But I got attacked at 14, so I was an ex-Roman Catholic. But at 8 and a half, I had a near-death experience where I literally died and met God face-to-face. And he sent me back. So I knew God was real, but I didn't go to church because I figured he didn't go to church. All right?
Mm-hmm.
But when I got my book back in the early 90s, Clay and Iron, face down on my basement, on my floor in my room, or basement floor in my room, in my home in Enfield, Nova Scotia, after coming back from Georgia, God told me to dictate these things, and people will think, because you're really smart, he said, you know, don't let them presume that. In fact, at the time I received Clay and Iron, I didn't know what the book of Isaiah was in the Old Testament. I knew no Hebrew. I knew nothing. I was a babe. Because being raised as a Catholic, you're almost taught not to teach and study the Bible unless your priest told you something. Okay? And by the way, there's more books in the Catholic Bible than there is in the so-called Protestant, which cut a lot of stuff out. But at the beginning of the book, and if you get an old copy, and I donated all of the proceeds to the Prophecy Club, there were 168,000 copies for Prophecy Club of Clay and Iron and 147,000 copies of Abortion to Armageddon. And God dictated and told me what to write. But he told me to write in the first part of the chapters. And it says, as Moses was, you are. And as Claire Aaron's rod was, clay and iron shall be. So if you want to call me a doctor, which, by the way, my ancestor Moses was, and a leader, which I am, and a fearless fighter like my like King David, which is a man after God's heart, I will do what God says if it kills me. You need to understand when I'm saying these things about the return of the dwarf star and about the globalists scrambling to get in their underground shelters and triggering off world war. Everything they're doing in the Middle East right now, including dropping nuclear bombs like Tim Alexander talked about in Yemen, and stirring up war so they'll close the Strait of Hormuz, which is the first major event you need to watch for. When they close the Strait, God help us. That's coming, and I don't know when, but I can tell you the peace treaty is coming, the partitioning of the State of Israel, which Obama wants to do before he leaves office with the United Nations by 2016. We have less than 2 years before Obama leaves office, and he wants to do all the things that are laid out there to lay the groundwork for the Antichrist in the end. If you think this is just a theory, God help you.